I wonder who your favourite apostle is. Do you have a favourite? Have you ever thought about that question before? I can see that some of you haven't. That's the sort of question I ponder. Who's my favourite? I was particularly thinking of Peter and Paul. Who's my favourite out of Peter and Paul? Because I think they're kind of the characters in the New Testament after Jesus that we know best, don't we, if you think about it? There's some names we know from the New Testament, but they're pretty kind of hazy figures, I think. So this is an icon of Peter and Paul. Do you know which one is Paul, by the way? You can tell. That's correct, but it's not because of his beard. Apparently, the only description, early description we have of Paul is that he was small and balding. And I've always had a fondness for Paul. So in most of the ancient pictures you see of him, he'll be the bald one. And I was thinking about these two, and I was thinking about really about Paul in terms of how other people saw him. And I thought, well, I'll go to some memes, because that's always a good way to find out if their memes exist. So Paul said, I never wrote a letter to the Philippines. That's a New Testament scholar's joke, obviously. Next one. Imitate me as I imitate Christ. I don't know if you about that one. Paul, and we thank Paul for this, a law against pork. Christianity is going to have bacon. Next one. Paul the Apostle shows up late to the party but brings it the hardest. Next one. One of the things that's interesting and affects this reading that we're talking about today is how other people saw Paul. And I remember reading this quote years ago when I was reading this book, Reflections on the Psalms by C.S. Lewis. And he said, I cannot be the only reader who has wondered why God, having given Paul so many gifts, withheld from him what would seem to be necessary for the first Christian theologian, that of lucidity and orderly exposition. Why would that matter? What's he talking about? Well, lots of people who read Paul's letters say that he just jumped from topic to topic. And I don't know if you noticed, but in our reading today, thanks for those slides, Anthony. I don't know if you noticed today, but that's exactly what Paul did. Did you notice the odd start to our reading? So he started chapter 2 with chapter 3. For this reason, I, Paul, the prisoner of Christ Jesus, for the sake of you Gentiles, and most of you, if you'd read it, would have had a dash there. And so from verses 2 to 13, Paul goes off on a tangent. And then he resumes at verse 14 and says, for this reason, and he resumes his thought. So what is this tangent? What is he talking about here? Well, really, he stops talking to the Ephesians about them, and for a moment he talks about himself. And it's interesting, I think, what he says about himself, because twice in this little passage that we read, he talks about gifts that he has been given. These two gifts. And the first gift is that the mystery of Christ has been revealed to him. The mystery of Christ. Now, mystery in the first century, it is a very similar word. It's spelled almost exactly the same than the way we spell it in English. But it doesn't mean quite the same thing. In first century Greek, a mystery was something that was a secret. So it was a secret that had been hidden but can be known, that is now being revealed. It's not something completely unknowable, like how to fold fitted sheets, right? That's completely unknowable. That is a mystery. No one does that, folds fitted sheets. But this idea that it was a secret that was once hidden but is now revealed. And this mystery that has been revealed that Paul's been talking about and we looked at last week is that the love and mercy of God are now offered to all people. And this is a paradigm shift. See, in the first century, it was a time of many, many religions. It was a time, as we talked about, when people would be loyal to Diana or Artemis in Ephesians, or they would have chosen some other god, perhaps from their ethnic background, or for various reasons they've just picked one from the pantheon of gods. And the idea was that a god looked after only those who followed him. But Paul says, no, the love of God is offered to all people. This is for everybody. All right, this isn't something that's just for those who have chosen him. It's the other way around. God freely offers this to everybody. And this was the mystery. Now, not everybody knew it, so in that sense, it was a secret. But it could be known, even if it was incomprehensible. You know, I talked a few weeks ago about the fact that I'd like to study this idea of reconciliation. As I ponder what it means, what Christ's death means, what his life, death, and resurrection means, I don't really know how it works, but I know that it does. And we're used to that, I think. There's lots of things in our lives, we don't know how they work, but we know that they do. Right? Our new building is magic, right? I don't know how it works. We have blinds that go up and down. In fact, did we put the blinds down today? They're up. There you go. So we've got blinds. We've got automatic lights. When I walk into rooms, the lights just turn on. I don't know how those switches work, but they do. All right? So we understand that, this idea that it's known, even if we don't fully understand how it works. But what Paul wants to stress, that this is God's doing, that God has revealed himself to us. He makes known the mystery. It wasn't that Paul discovered it or invented it. That's not what he means at all. It was revealed to him. And this good news is Jesus. It's the good news of Jesus, that Jesus is the gospel. And this then leads to the second gift that Paul is given, and it's his mission. And he says, I was given this gift to announce this mystery. The second thing he was given, his calling on his life. And he doesn't hold back in describing his mission and calling. He talks about it as unsearchable riches. I wonder if someone says to you, how would you explain your Christian faith, you know, your calling as a Christian? I wonder what you would say. What is your calling as a Christian? What are you meant to be doing? Paul says, I'm called to make known to principalities and powers the unsearchable riches of Christ, to help all people see the mysteries hidden for ages in God who created all things. Now, is your answer something like that when people ask you? Well, it was for Paul. Basically, it meant, I'm going to tell people about Jesus. I'm going to tell people about Jesus. Because he uses this word in verse 9, and it means to make plain, in fact, enlighten, so people can see. This idea that we bring the light of Jesus when we tell people about him. This idea that we bring light into dark places. And we know that. Sometimes, normally, in fact, we watch the news when we eat our dinner as a family. And sometimes it almost feels like we have to turn the news off. I don't know if you ever get that feeling. Like there's just so much bad news. You know, countries in turmoil, greedy, evil leaders in the world who are tearing their countries apart, holding on to power. Dysfunction in families, you know, innocent people who suffer. We know that there is darkness in the world, don't we? And that's our job, to bring light into these dark places. And not all of us can travel to the Middle East to do something about the problems there. But we can do something about bringing light into dysfunctional families, into hurting communities, about bringing light to the lonely, to the lost and the least, because we've got this grand message. Remember, God's story is our story too. And what Paul also wants to say is that it's a message that we bring together. It's a story that we tell together. We are all, as God's people, part of this great mission. He says it in verse 10, God's intent was that now, through the church, the manifold wisdom of God should be made known. Through the church, the ecclesia, the gathered people of God. And he's given us a clue about this togetherness. And in fact, the NIV translates this really well. It says in verse 6, we are heirs together with Israel. We are members together. We are sharers together. This idea of together, we do this. Because truth be told, it's a too big a job for one of us, I think. Paul never did it on his own. He always had a team of people who helped him. I think Paul's idea is that together we become this real team. Now, I used to teach leadership subjects, and sometimes we used to talk about real teams or committees. And real teams in kind of organisational studies, real teams are when a group of people work together, and it's only by working together that they can achieve their aim. And in fact, by working together, they create a synergy. So more becomes possible by working together than if we just add up the sum of the parts. Now, that's not true of all teams. Some teams are task forces or committees, and we apportion jobs, but one person could do it on their own, which is saving time sometimes by working together. But there's this idea at the heart that real teams, really high-impact teams, that they work together. And there's all sorts of theories around that about how people work together. But this idea of a real team is, I think, what Paul is talking about here. This idea, this synergy that's created because the job's too big for us. And I think that should encourage us. It should do our hearts good to remember that we don't do this on our own. Because often our role in the Christian community can seem so very small or menial or behind the scenes. You know, that idea, we used to sing this old chorus, I have not much to give thee, Lord. And sometimes it can feel like that, I have not much to give thee, Lord. There's a story, I hope it's true, it's what they call a preacher's story. You couldn't possibly know if it was true, you couldn't possibly disprove it, but it makes a good point. But apparently, Sir Christopher Wren was building St Paul's Cathedral. Now, you know who Sir Christopher Wren was? The great architect who rebuilt London after the Fire of London. We all know that, don't we? You all remember that. And you know that one of the buildings he built was St Paul's Cathedral, right? That cathedral just near international headquarters, as it happens. And apparently, while he was touring the worksite, one day he was just meeting the ordinary artisans and workmen who were working there. And he said to the first guy, what are you doing? And the stonemason said, I'm cutting this stone to a certain size and shape. And he went to a second guy and he said, what are you doing? And he said, well, I'm earning the money to pay the bills to keep my family alive. And then he went to a third person. And the third person said, I'm helping Sir Christopher Wren build St Paul's Cathedral. All right. We get the idea, even if we don't know if the story's true or not. It's how we look at that job, isn't it? That menial task, that small part we play in God's economy. That we're sharers together in this great business of bringing light to our community. And we do it, I think. We do it. You know, as we approach Christmas, there'll be people whose Christmas is better this year because we make the effort to help them. And that would not be possible if we did not. We will bring light into people's lives. We can make a difference. You see, for Paul, we're all involved in his great business of bringing the light of the gospel, the revealed mystery, to a broken world. And so he saw them as two gifts, these things that he'd been given, this revelation and commission, that the mystery and the ministry. And he said to the church at Ephesus, it's for you too. And that's why he breaks off and he goes into this little aside where seemingly he's talking about himself, but really he's talking about the mission of all Christians. And I like that really he says, don't be discouraged. He says right at the end there, don't worry about me. I know I'm in jail. Right, perhaps facing death, it'll be fine. He says, don't be discouraged. Don't be discouraged. Perhaps implying don't stop either. Paul encourages them from prison. I told you that Paul's my favourite, right? He's kind of the first Christian who didn't really know Jesus. So in a sense, he's the first of us, right? Because we never saw Jesus in the flesh either. But I wonder what Paul would say to us now. What would he say to us now? What would his encouragement be to Parramatta Core? You see, he resumes his focus on them, and we didn't read the rest of the chapter. And he goes on to pray for them, and he says, to a God who is able to do more than we can ask or even imagine. How would Paul see our vision statement? I think we've got it on a slide here. Do you remember our dream? To be a vibrant expression of the Salvation Army, where God is at work as we minister faithfully to all generations and all nations, sharing the love of Jesus and helping others to know Jesus more and more. Would Paul think we'd got it right? I think he would. I think he would. And I hope, like me, you long for this to happen. You long for our community to be changed by our presence. So we don't give up, and nor do we rest. You see, the thing is, it's not that we've arrived with our new building. This is just the beginning, isn't it? It's not the end, it's just the beginning. It's just the beginning. Now we get down to the real work. We're just getting started. So we don't lose heart. The mission will go on. We know the mystery. We have our mission. So let's begin again and again and again. So let's pilot and test and discard and enhance. And it's not easy. It's not easy, I think, to get it right. But we don't give up trying because it matters. It matters. You see, we know the mystery. We have our mission. Let the work begin. I'm going to invite our musicians to take their places. I do love this song, Transfiguration. It's really about that moment where Peter, Paul and James encountered Jesus. That great story, that mysterious story, really, where they too were confronted with the mystery of Jesus and who he was. And as we sing this song, perhaps we can pray in our hearts that God will reveal himself to us again. That we will open up our hearts and we'll say to God, what is it that you want me to do? What's my gift? What's the calling you have on my life? Let's hear from Jesus as we sing together.